Now, there's a growing number of Americans going without health insurance. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, more than 500,000 more people did not have health insurance in 2017, marking the first time the number of uninsured Americans grew since the Affordable Care Act was implemented. Last year, Bloomberg Health News kicked off a year-long reporting project looking into the experiences of uninsured Americans called Risking It: Stories from America's Uninsured. Drew Armstrong leads the U.S. Health News team for Bloomberg News. Drew, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you guys for having me back.
Well, we talked to you about a year ago when you were kicking off this project. Remind us about what you were hoping to find out.
So we really wanted to, about 5 years since the Affordable Care Act began, really expanding coverage to millions and millions of people, take a look at that program, how it was working or wasn't working, and really dig deep into the lives of the people who had said, you know, we wanted to be insured, we think this is the best thing for a family, but for one reason or another, we can't do it. And we spent our time focusing on people who are pretty firmly middle class and have, you know, aspirations to provide a better life for their kids. They make decent salaries. I mean, these are not kind of the poorest of the poor that I think a lot of people think about when they think about the uninsured. These are very, very standard middle class incomes of people who you would think would be wealthy enough to afford this kind of thing. And for one reason or another, they weren't able to, and they were making very serious, well-considered financial decisions about what they were going to have to squeeze out. And often, healthcare was that thing.
Right. The stories you guys share, these are not just frivolous decisions. People are really weighing the pros and cons, the costs of healthcare, the deductibles, which we'll get into in a minute, and ultimately coming to this conclusion that they might be better off without healthcare, a coverage, I should say.
I think that no one thought that they would necessarily be better off. This was more a choice of saying, you know, we have four needs or something like that. We have to put a roof over our head. We have to feed our kids, we have to pay college tuition, and we have to pay cars, you know, car payments so we can get to work, and we have to buy health care insurance. But the reality is that even though these people might make, you know, $75,000 a year as a family of four, they can't afford one of those things. And they had to make a very, very big decision. And the reason we called Risking It was because they knew the decision that they were taking was risky. They knew that they were exposing themselves to potentially catastrophic financial and health outcomes by doing this. And yet, when they looked at everything they had to do, they felt like this was the one thing that wasn't going to mean not having a car, not having a house, not being able to send their kids to college. And they said, we're going to have to chance it. We don't have any other options.
Let's get into some of the reasons that put people in these positions. One of them, and you spent a lot of time in a piece on this, high deductibles. Talk about how that's affecting people.
Yeah, this is something that was through and through, we kept hearing over and over again. And one thing to know about our story was that when we started this project, we'd identified about a dozen families across the U.S. And we ran our first story and we asked people to write in and tell us about themselves and say, hey, if you don't have insurance as well, or you've had to make this tough decision or been faced with this, we want to hear from you. And we gave people a form that they could fill out. And we thought, you know, I'll be totally honest. I was the editor on this story. And I thought, okay, maybe, you know, 50 or 100 people will write in. We had 5,000 people who wrote us very thoughtful, considered responses, shared their lives with us, and actually ended up being the basis for a much, much wider project than we had originally anticipated. And one of the things that came through with a lot of those people were people actually were insured, but they were in insurance plans that required them to pay anywhere from, you know, $1,000 to $10,000 out of pocket before their coverage kicked in. And that's in addition to the, you know, perhaps $500 or $600 or $1,000 a month they were already paying in premiums. So you're really looking at, when you get to the end of the year, you're looking at families that were paying $20,000 a year in some cases before they actually had any benefit from insurance. And what we found in talking to these people was you would see people who they had insurance, they had done what they thought was the right thing. They'd maybe even put a little bit of money aside. And at the same time, they had had a major health event and found, you know, that they were owing $8,000 in medical bills and having to pay those medical bills while also trying to keep up their insurance premiums. And, you know, you'd look at the economic statistics in this country and you see something along the lines of like 40% of people in the United States, they don't have the cash set aside to deal with a $400 emergency without having to sell something or borrow money from friends. There's a really severe burden that you put on people when you ask them to pay that much out of pocket. And exactly that happens when people need to go and pick up drugs for an illness. Let's say they get in a car accident, you know, and they're injured and they need to get an MRI. That number in that deductible adds up very, very, very fast and can be a sudden, shocking expense for people who thought that they were protected.
And under a lot of employer-based health care, I learned from your series, a lot of employers move to a high deductible plan, the idea being, okay, it'll make people think carefully. They won't frivolously go get health care they don't need. They'll only use it when they need it. People are finding that isn't working as they had hoped.
Yeah, I think there was an idea in the early 2000s that we would introduce the idea of shopping, the power of the consumer, and that would solve all these problems in healthcare. But anybody who's ever had to deal with a healthcare problem or has been taken away in an ambulance knows that you don't have a whole lot of power to shop for anything when you are bleeding or you're unconscious or you've been in a hospital or you've been you're in an ambulance. You're not talking to the EMTs and saying, well, hey, what are the rates on a CT scan at the hospital across town that's going to take 20 minutes further for me to get to? I mean, no one does that. You're asking people to apply rational, you know, consumer behavior to a situation where it's impossible to make a rational decision. And yet, we have seen employers for years and years start to put people into these plans. And, you know, while the justification behind it is saying, oh, we'll shop at a lower healthcare cost, the reality is they're just cheaper for employers to do. It is a way of cutting down the upfront premium that an employer has to pay and that often an employee is asked to pay a part of, instead of just, you know, and pushing that cost then onto the patient when they get injured. And so what you end up having is now that we've got about 40% of people, I think it's 39% of employers offer high deductible plans, you see all of these people who, you know, again, they have insurance, they've kind of done everything that they've been asked to, and all of a sudden they're hit with a sudden $1,000 expense. I think, you know, and often just for receiving routine care. I mean, this is for people who have chronic conditions and they get to the beginning of their deductible and all of a sudden it's like, gosh, I got to go fill my prescriptions and I'm just paying $1,000 out of pocket. This isn't something that they have the ability to necessarily do a lot of shopping or be thoughtful or stay healthier. We're kind of just hitting people with this money and asking them to deal with it. I think you're starting to see a little bit of a backlash to that now. You're seeing some large employers say, wait a second, this isn't working the way that we thought it would. Is there a way to be more sophisticated and ask people to shop for things that maybe they could shop for and not really nail people when they're in a situation where they don't really have the ability to make a choice or they're taking preventative primary care medicines where no matter what, they're going to need those things. You're starting to see employers reconsider these type of insurance plan designs.
Talking to Drew Armstrong from the health news team at Bloomberg News, talking about their series on people who for one reason or another have had to go without insurance. It's called Risking It, Stories from America's Uninsured. Some of the painful decisions your team wrote about, Drew, were people having to decide, okay, which family member can have coverage or how often can we have coverage? How can we cobble something together? Can you talk about some of the solutions people came up with?
Yeah, we spent a ton of time with a family down in Texas, just outside Dallas, the Maldonados. David is the father. Maribel is his wife. They have a son, Christian, and a daughter, Alexa. The two kids are college age and are both in college when we were reporting on them. And David really, I mean, this family is a lot of ways the American dream. They make about $100,000 a year. He has a very successful job as a salesman, I believe, for construction equipment. The job provided health care insurance for him and his family. I mean, I believe that he is originally from Mexico and a legal immigrant, if I have this correct. One of the families is, and the other one has their background there. I mean, these are very much, you know, classic American, you know, several generations back immigrant story, doing their best. They're living in a middle-class suburb outside of Dallas. In 2012, he was still working for the construction company where he was working. His wife, Maribel, got breast cancer, and she was diagnosed, and they had health insurance. And he told us about, he said, you know what, our lives fell apart, but we had health insurance. And she was able to get treatment and get taken care of. 2 years after that, his job came to every employee there and said, we've got some good news. You all still have your jobs, but the bad news is we cannot afford to provide you guys health care insurance anymore. And he was going to have to go from paying $260 a month, which was his contribution to get coverage for his family, up to almost $1,400. And they did everything they could. They took out loans to be able to keep their kids in college and to help pay for premiums. But ultimately, this got to a point where they could no longer afford it. They were looking at premiums of $1,600 a month, and they started to decide who is the least likely person in our family to get sick and who can afford to drop off health insurance. And David and the son, Christian, they were the first ones to go. And then Alexa, who was suffering from asthma but was in college, they took her off next, and they have put all their healthcare dollars into keeping Maribel on health insurance to keep an eye on her cancer.
We're talking to Drew Armstrong, part of the U.S. Health News team for Bloomberg News, about their series called Risking It, Stories from America's Uninsured. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been in this situation, having to calculate if you can afford to continue to get health insurance? What kind of decisions did you make if you are uninsured? Are you just hoping for the best? Are you cobbling something together, some kind of safety net? Call and share your story or your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Drew Armstrong from Bloomberg News, talking about a project there, Risking It, about Americans without health insurance. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had to go without health insurance? Why? How is that for you? How much stress is there in your life because of that? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Mike is with us in Brown Deer. Mike, hello.
Hi. I just recently moved back here from North Carolina, but I was in the position where I had an employer-based plan. The employer went bankrupt. I ended up working for a company that didn't offer a health care plan. And at the time, I was able to buy a Blue Cross Blue Shield. It had a high deductible. I think it was $10,000 for the family. But I was able to pay for that for about $330 a month. And that had a $25 copay and low prescription rates and everything like that. After the Affordable Care Act, I was no longer able to buy a plan that inexpensive. It jumped to about $800 a month. When I got into an employee-based plan, I was basically paying about the same amount of money through an employee-based plan out of my paycheck. So we just opted out of it. And in North Carolina, they had kind of some of these little clinics called Fast Meds and stuff like that around, and they just had $75 copays. You could go in, get treated, get antibiotics, sometimes for free, and that just seemed to be the better alternative. And I was a dad and a wife and two kids, ages 10 years old to 14 years old, for about a year and a half. We had to do that just because we couldn't afford to be on the health care when it changed to the Affordable Care Act. And I was making about $74,000 a year.
Mike, thanks a lot for sharing your story. A couple things there, Drew. First of all, the Affordable Care Act expanded coverage for a lot of lower income people. Was it common for people in Mike's position making too much to maybe participate in the Affordable Care Act exchanges, seeing their costs go up?
Yeah, this was really a lot of the core group that we heard from. If you were at a lower income level, you were probably getting subsidies that were really helping with your purchase of insurance. And the coverage gains in those groups have been pretty good, and people seem to be generally happy with it. Once you start to get up into the middle class band, above $75,000, closer to $100,000, those subsidies drop away. And at the same time, one of the things that has happened on the Affordable Care Act markets is that the quality of the coverage in some ways does it cover quite a bit, and does it cover all these benefits and things like that, is very good, but it's also correspondingly more expensive. And again, if you're getting a subsidy, that may not matter as much to you. But people like your caller who might not be getting a subsidy, those people are really, really, really feeling the pinch in cases like this because they are being forced to pay those flat out rates that, again, you know, they're not getting any financial help from this, and they're looking at plans that really are not going to be, or they are, they may be too expensive for them to afford and still come with a big deductible and things like that. What your caller did, you know, talking about going into a primary care clinic, that is how a lot of people are coping with this. They're doing what we refer to as kind of patching together a plan. They're saying, I'm going to buy my way into a primary care physician practice where I'll pay a couple hundred dollars a month. They let me go to see them as much as I need to. It takes care of basic stuff if I get sick with a cold or something like that. That's not an emergency room. You know, it's not where you can go if you have cancer or you're bleeding and it won't stop. But it does let you see a doctor. And then the other things people will do, they'll join these things called Christian sharing ministries, which are essentially religious organizations. They come with some religious rules that come with them. They don't have a lot of the rules around insurance that does, but they are cheaper. You know, they essentially, the deal is they don't cover as much, but they cost less money. They're essentially a way out of some of the ACA rules about what has to be covered. They don't consider themselves insurance. You know, but people are looking for this. This has not worked for a lot of people, especially folks in certain ranges of income are really feeling like they did not get a good deal here.
Mike, thanks again for calling. We'll go now to Katie with us in Appleton. Katie, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to ask about, Katie?
Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in. Your guest had been discussing before the high deductible plans and how that can really hit a family hard if there is a medical emergency. And I wanted to just do a little shout out to the HSA plans that go with those plans as an opportunity. My employer did a great job when we went to a high deductible plan of really encouraging us to take the difference in what we were paying in our premiums prior to the change and start investing that in the HSA plan. And our employer also contributed to the HSA plan, which was great. But I think that that's a great opportunity to take the highs and lows out. We had a medical emergency in our family this last year, and the HSA plan covered, you know, we had been able to save enough through that plan over the last couple of years that it really wasn't an issue for us at all.
Katie, thanks a lot for the call. So those health savings accounts in combination with the high deductible plan, she says, worked pretty well for her family, Drew.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that is something you hear. An HSA can be a really, really great way of pairing with a high deductible plan. The problem with an HSA is you have to have money to put into it, or your employer has to put money into it for you. And if that's done and you do have money in there, you know, it works out great. I think some employers have looked at these things as saying, you know, while they're, you know, you can go and get an HSA, you're going to have to fund it yourself. I mean, what is going on here is that essentially you have healthcare costs rising and rising and rising, and employers are looking for ways to deal with that. And one of the ways that they have traditionally dealt with that is to say, we will buy something that is less expensive. We will cover less. And so you can put people in a high deductible plan and then not fund an HSA, which is one way of saving money and dealing with your healthcare costs as a company. Yes, it is definitely true that it's kind of a best practice. Having money in that account will save you the ups and downs. And, you know, if you don't use that money, you can roll it over to the next year. And you can really protect yourself from a lot of those risks. And unfortunately, that's not an option for everybody.
Thanks a lot for the call, Katie. Drew, since the Affordable Care Act passed, we've seen lots of efforts to repeal it. Have there been efforts, though, at the national level to say, okay, we've got this group, as you were saying, middle-class people who are kind of hurt here under the Affordable Care Act, and can we tweak the system as it exists to help them more?
Yeah, we're seeing the beginnings of some of those things. Short-term plans, which are coming back, the ability to buy essentially what is really, really skimpy insurance with a lot of limits. Those are, you know, they're now, I guess, there's no other way to describe them as saying they're long-term, short-term plans, so you can buy those for longer periods of time and use them as coverage. There's talk about association health plans. You know, again, These are kind of alternatives to the more protection providing coverage that is out there under ACA. And as you know, in response, they are cheaper as well. I mean, that is, you know, the forever trade-off in healthcare insurance is essentially that you are going to get what you pay for. And what you're buying at the very high end tends to be super, super expensive. A lot of people would like the option of buying something that is not as comprehensive, that does not provide as many benefits, and frankly may leave them extremely exposed in the event of a severe illness or a major medical event. But it is something. And I think that there have been a lot of debates over the last decade about what is exactly the right amount of protection that we owe people on medical. And, you know, that's why you're seeing these questions right now about should we have Medicare for all? Should we have some kind of universal coverage? The ACA probably got part of the way there, but it also left some people in a difficult situation and asked them to pay quite a bit of money if they were going to get coverage.
We'll leave it there for now. Drew, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you guys for having me on.
That's Drew Armstrong with Bloomberg's U.S. Health News team. He was with us to talk about a year-long project there reporting on the challenges for Americans going without health insurance. Thanks for your calls as well and for sharing your stories. The series is called Risking It, Stories from America's Uninsured. You can find all those stories linked online at wpr.org/centraltime. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, a new report finds that converting to renewable energy sources could create a lot of jobs here in Wisconsin. The authors of that report join the show to make the case.